AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. We are going big picture on this National Farmers Day. Big picture fundamentals influencing the country's bean business. And big picture weather trends that will influence your plans for the rest of the fall, this winter, and potentially even next spring. And we'll get to some big news this morning. Bushel bought GrainBridge.
Live from the forefront of a jam-packed, ag-formative program via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Steve Gerlt from the American Soybean Association. Then it's the gang from BAM WX, Michael Clark and Kirk Hinz. Later, Jake Jorenstad, the CEO of Bushel. Right after the news, Karen Bonertz from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Man, I feel like we need to check the schedule again. Are you sure we're doing all of that today?
We got to fit it all in. We got to fit
somehow,
it all in.
Some way. Wow.
Yeah. Well, wow. National Farmers Day, you know?
It is.
We pack it in for National
That's
Farmers
right.
Day because it's that darn important.
Yep. We threw the question out there. What are you doing to celebrate National Farmers Day?
Uh-huh.
We've got guys on parts runs.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got guys just trying to find parts.
Mm-hmm.
We've got corn harvesting. Mm-hmm. There's, you know what? I think National Farmers Day is kind of a day in the middle of October that guys are doing what they always do.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It ain't exactly like Labor Day, you know. It's
opening
adult beverage, grill, maybe take a nap. No, that's not.
There's things to do. It's that time of the year. There are things to do. So, and it feels like fall out there. We're going to talk about what is influencing the current trends that we've got in the weather with Kirk Hinz, Michael Clark from BAM WX. Looking forward to that. And the conversation with Scott Gerlt from ASA. We're going to start with one of your favorite topics. Well, it's one of my favorite topics, too, and that's fertilizer and how fertilizer prices might influence the crop mix for 2022. Mm-hmm. And we'll also talk about something that we've covered a lot, and the real answers that we're looking for in the renewable diesel business is how are we going to supply all the feedstock for all the demand that's potentially there?
Right.
We'll talk with Scott about that as well. So looking forward to it. Should be great. Mm-hmm. Should be great.
I can't wait.
All right.
I can't wait.
Let's get to it. What you got the news?
Well, Chip, USDA's 2021 and 22 domestic balance sheets will reflect the September 1 stocks data and the final 2021 wheat crop estimate, along with any changes to corn and soybean production. That could produce some major adjustments, especially for soybeans, which will see projected 21 and 22 ending stocks rise sharply, potentially above 300 million bushels. We've got reports coming out in less than an hour now, Chip. And
Right. Shameless
plug, we're going to dig deep into the details on this afternoon's program, correct?
That's exactly right. You and I will have the details of the reports, the supply and demand report, the crop production report. We'll look at some of the trends inside of the trends in the reports.
Well, Chip, Brazil's 21-22 soybean crop will likely climb 5.1% from last year's big crop to a record, according to South American crop consultant Dr. Michael Cordonier, who expects an increase in acreage. As of October 7, 10% of the crop had been planted, which was a 6-point advance from the week prior, according to Ag Rural. Cordonier noted this year's start has been much better than last year's. He estimates the Brazilian 21-22 corn crop up 37% from last season.
Yeah.
Now, while that growing season is off to a good start, farmers are worried about delivery delays or cancellations for inputs like fertilizers and chemicals.
They're dealing with the same thing. It's a global issue, Davis.
It is.
And finally, I think the business networks are starting to put the right emphasis on the disruptions that we are seeing, because it's not just in farm products. It's consumer goods are seeing some of the disruptions that that farmers are seeing when it comes to fertilizer, chemicals, concerns going into next spring already.
Yep. Well, the International Monetary Fund is expected to estimate slightly lower economic growth in 2021 than the 6% it forecast in June. The expected reduction is based in part on the uneven growth trajectories of wealthy countries and their poorer counterparts. Most advanced economies would return to pre-pandemic levels by 2022, while emerging economies would take, quote, many more years to recover. Chip, U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai has announced tariff exclusions for 549 products currently subject to Section 301 tariffs on China. The exclusions are limited to products previously granted exclusions. Today, the U.S. Trade Rep's office opened a 50-day comment period. Now, Chip, requests for comments are interesting here. They're looking for comments to revolve around the potential for domestic sources for similar products, how hard U.S. companies have worked to seek those domestic sources, and domestic production capacity. Sounds like they want to move some of that production back to the good old U.S. of A.
Well, I think you're right on that, but I'm not exactly sure how they're providing exclusions to the tariffs on products that had previously been granted exclusions. I don't know how that's going to impact anything.
Exclusions will continue until morale improves. I think it's how the saying
that's
goes.
That's it.
USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack reports the agency is working on a proposal to offer waivers for hog plants required to slow line speeds. The WHO is calling on China to increase surveillance of a deadly H5N6 variant of bird flu. And during the fiscal year ended September 30, Farmers National Company reports a record amount of land was sold to the tune of $750 million of real estate, attributing it partially to the introduction of online auctions. Chip.
Holy smokes. Okay, yeah, we need to keep real close tabs on Secretary Vilsack's efforts to get those line speeds back up and running. Okay, thank you, Davis.
You bet.
Let's bring in Karen Bonert, Farm Journal's milk editor. How you doing, Karen?
I'm great. How are you, Chip?
Doing just fine. Hey, don't look now, but Milk Business Conference is right around the corner.
I know, and I'm looking forward to connecting in person. It'll be our 18th annual conference, and while producers have other conferences to attend, we know that this is the conference. It's capitalizing on a great lineup of speakers and sessions to really help dairy producers address both the challenges as well as the opportunities that face them. So it's November 30th to December 2nd. Mark your calendar. The Milk Business Conference is online. Register today. Let me talk to you real quick about some of the sessions. They include 5 megatrends in 2022 and beyond. Talking about the future revenue might be more than just the milk price. Next, we'll talk about how to become the employer of choice. We could have an entire conference on this. The need is that big. Also, we'll have, Chip, a session about turning manure into money, reviewing and evaluating the types of tech producers should consider, the economics, questions to ask, and more. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to turn to a candid conversation about mental health. Ted Matthews, the go-to farmer counselor, takes the stage, and you know him, and we'll also have a dairy producer sharing his mental health struggle. We'll have Beef on Dairy, the story about traceability. Walt Coleman, the longest-serving referee in NFL history, shares his great story. So much more, including you, Chip. You'll be there in person with your wit, with your energy. So we're excited. The National Rodeo Finals are on the end of the conference, so it's going to be a fantastic week. However, I want people to know the early bird registration ends this Friday. So register today at milkbusinessconference.com. I'm excited. I know you are, too.
You bet. MilkBusinessConference.com. Early bird registration ends Friday. Thanks, Karen. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
All right. We've got Scott Girl coming up next.
A little cold weather never hurt anybody, but with typical number 2 diesel, it can do a number on your field equipment. Cenex Premium Diesel comes with a more complete additive package for a more complete burn. That's how Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster Seasonally Enhanced optimizes cold weather performance. Or stick with your fair weather friend, typical number 2. Your choice. Cenex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Davis Michelson is with us.
Affirmative.
Excellent. Excellent. Let's. We've got a lot of ground to cover with Scott Girt from the American Soybean Association. He's the economist there. So I want to jump right into it. Scott, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on, Chip.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here because Davis and I have spent a lot of time already this year talking about the renewable diesel, and I want to talk about that coming up in a bit. But first, I want to talk about something that Davis and I have been talking about for the last, I don't know, geez, 6 weeks at least, and that's been a steep climb in fertilizer costs, and it's going to have impacts on the decisions that soybean growers, that corn growers make for the year ahead. What are your expectations?
Yeah, that's a great question, Chip. And, you know, we're hearing about this a lot from our soybean growers. The fertilizer industry has faced a lot of challenges this year. There's been all sorts of supply chain issues, weather issues such as Hurricane Ida, winter storms, natural gas prices are going up. There's countervailing duties or tariffs on multiple fertilizer products from multiple countries. And so we've seen fertilizer prices about double. And so that is changing the math on relative profitability. You hear talk of people looking at planting more corn, planting more soybeans just because of the higher fertilizer costs for corn. So I was penciling that out to some degree, and I'm not sure we're quite there yet. Soybean to corn price ratio has dropped quite a bit for next planting season compared to what it was for the current planting season. Mm-hmm. And so I think that may still favor corn just a bit on that, but it's made it a lot closer than it would have been otherwise. So, I mean, there's a lot of time between now and next planting season for, sure. for prices to move around more in fertilizer. But given fertilizer prices and just the corn and bean price, I'm not sure that it's going to be overwhelming for soybeans. It definitely looks better than it would otherwise, but that's kind of what I'm expecting at this point.
Okay. You know, Scott, when I pose this question to farmers and some guys at co-ops, are you hearing anything from the farmers? Is there going to be any wholesale changes in 2022? The mm-hmm. answer every time has been it's tough to bust these guys out of their rotations. So when we think about that, you know, it used to be if we could get the soybean to corn price ratio into that 2.6, 2.7 range, it would start to pencil out more, move some acres over to beans, maybe. But I think because everybody's right. so locked into that rotation, it's going to take more incentive than that, isn't it?
Yeah, I think research has been pretty overwhelming that there's a lot of advantages to sticking into your rotation. So I think it is going to take quite a bit of movement here to really move people off of that rotation.
Right. What are your expectations? And if this is something that is outside of your thought process, that's fine. But do you have a set of expectations on what this fertilizer market's going to do?
Oh, that's a really good question. Like I said, there's a lot of factors, and some of those are shorter time frame factors, and some of them aren't. So, I'm hopeful we'll see some relaxing of price, but I think some of these factors are going to be with us for a little while. I mean, so the countervailing duties, tariffs, those are going to be on for a while, very likely. Some of the issues such as Hurricane Ida slowing down shipments or closing some facilities or some of the winter storm issues, those are shorter term and those will get fixed here before long. But we're still facing supply chain issues like labor, freight costs, and those could potentially be around a little bit. Those are really a wild card. It's hard to really predict those. Same with natural gas prices. What do you see happening there? So I think we have such a range of issues that I think there's going to continue to be some some higher prices for a while. I mean, there's just a lot of demand for fertilizer too. That's something I really haven't talked about yet, but there's quite a few more acres being planted.
Yeah.
And so I can make a case for some weakening of prices, but I can also make a case that we're not going to go back to where we were recently anytime soon.
Right. Right. Exactly. And it feels a bit like 2008, except 2008 didn't have the supply chain disruptions that we are dealing with this year, Scott. And I think that means that it's going to stick around for a while longer. We can come back to the fertilizer market and the decisions on 2022 plantings in a bit, but let's move on to the renewable diesel. On AgriTalk, we have climbed a learning curve to learn about renewable diesel. And we've climbed that curve on sustainable aviation fuel as well. The bottom line, renewable diesel is the fuel, the equivalent of petroleum-based diesel, except that it's expected to be part of the solution in getting to a carbon-neutral liquid fuel. It's quite a task, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think we've all done had a steep learning curve on these products, because it has come on so fast and changed the markets very quickly. It's exciting. I mean, from a soybean perspective, it's quite exciting to be part of some of these solutions for carbon neutrality. But it's taken a lot of the demand, our soybean oil demand growth for renewable diesel. And as your listeners probably know, just a quick background on this, biodiesel is the traditional product, but it isn't chemically the same as renewable diesel, like you mentioned. Renewable diesel can be just dropped right into diesel engines and run at 100%. And we're seeing a lot of the oftentimes the renewable diesel is produced in petroleum refineries, whereas biodiesel takes a different type of plant. So it's not an easy conversion. You really just can't convert a biodiesel plant. And so we're seeing the rise of a lot of large renewable diesel plants. They're much larger than biodiesel. And the renewable diesel they're hoping to produce will largely be consumed in California because of their low carbon fuel standard.
Right, right. These refiners, they need to be really careful about the quality of the product that they're bringing in. So they're actually looking for high quality feedstock coming in, right?
Correct. A lot of them are putting in some capacity to do that refining because, like you say, they can kill their catalyst if they're not careful.
Yeah.
So for soybean oil, they need refined, bleached, and degummed soybean oil. So that's what they're out there looking for. Or if they can put in their own refining capacity, they can take care of that themselves. But yeah, that's an issue. They need a certain quality of product.
Man, everybody at ASA has got to be excited about the investment that's coming into the crush capacity here in the States, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's a long-term demand growth for us. That is really exciting. But it'll help provide more soybean oil for renewable diesel. It'll help livestock guys providing more soybean meal, and it'll help provide demand for soybeans into the future. So it's a very exciting time. There's a lot of sectors that are really going to do well with this.
Yeah. What are the risks associated with this push to renewable diesel, Scott? Because it's the size of the market, the potential size of the market is huge. Can we keep up?
It is. So if you look at announcements out there, there's about 7 billion gallons of renewable diesel announcements as far as capacity. I've been pretty straightforward in saying I don't think we're going to get to 7 billion. There's not the feedstocks. California doesn't need that much when you look at their carbon market. I mean, there's some growth in some other states of carbon markets, but none of them are the scale of California. So I think the market is going to do what the market does and figure out where these things should go and what the optimal size is. The profit margins are really good right now for renewable diesel, but I think as we see more plants coming online, those margins will get tighter. I think one of the bigger risks is, just our conventional buyers of soybean oil, just making sure that they, that they're well taken care of, which is what we want.
Can't forget about the demand base. No question about that.
But we're building more crush. So, okay.
Yep, that's right. Scott, we are out of time. Let's talk again soon. Thank you so much. That's Scott Gerlt, American Soybean Association economist.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady, and we are 1/2 hour away from the crop production and supply and demand updates. And ahead of it, corn and soybeans feeling some pressure. Brian, what's going on?
Yeah, definitely. The soy complex leading us down, soy oil under heavy pressure, soybeans under heavy pressure. So just definitely no active buyers here. Like you mentioned, 1/2 hour before the report. And the report's expected to show a huge jump in new crop ending stocks on a bigger crop supply than what USDA estimated last month. But the real big change is that September 1 stocks figure that we got on September 30th. They came in well above what was expected. So that's beginning stocks for the current marketing year.
Yeah, at least we had a lead up to the big increase in the new crop carry over on soybeans because of that September 1 number. A lot of it should already be factored in and baked into current soybean prices, because that November contract's it's quite a bit closer to $12 than it is to $12.50 right now. So just something that we need to watch very closely. Some mixed trade in the cattle complex.
Yeah, all in all, it's pretty quiet start to the week yesterday and pretty quiet again. Just waiting on cash cattle opinions to form one and trade to form after that. So I think it's just kind of pause mode here as we wait on that cash market to kind of develop for the week. The weakness in the corn market is helping feeders just a little bit.
Well, and there's weakness in hogs. Good grief.
Yeah, just continues to break down. So we're seeing that the contracts are well into that September 27th gap, which was the post H&P report price action.
Gotcha. Thank you, Brian. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Davis, it is an exciting time for the soybean industry here in the U.S.
I'm very excited. Yes.
You know, beans have always been kind of the second crop, okay? What do we always say? American farmer loves to grow corn.
That's true. We do say that.
Everybody says that. And I think, in general, corn is that crop that they all go for. And I think part of the reason for that is the competition that we've got on the soybean side of things. out of Brazil and other parts of the world. Argentina isn't the competitor that it used to be, but nonetheless, and I think we're going to see some change in attitude toward growing soybeans because of the demand issues that we were talking about with Scott from ASA. I
don't know. I don't know. See, to me, the big appeal with corn is it grows tall and it's kind of like a fort, you know, that's what I think it is.
Okay.
I like that a lot too. Like,
I think we're going to have to start growing bean plants the size of hops. To produce
well,
enough.
Then you'd have something.
Yeah, to produce enough per acre. I think we're going to have to start doing that. Make sure they're loaded up with pods, though. Don't just go rank on us like that. Yeah, all right, let's get to a conversation about the weather. We've got Michael Clark from BAMWX. How are you, Michael?
Doing good, Chip. How are you?
Doing real fine, real fine. We've also got Kirk Hens from BAMWX. Kirk, good to talk with you again.
Good to see you, man. We're excited today.
All right. Let's start with some really big picture stuff on the weather trends. And whoever wants to handle it, handle it. But give us an update on what's going on with La Nina.
Yeah, I mean, you know, right now it's starting to really strengthen. When you look at the MEI index, which is the multi-ENSO index, that kind of really tells us where we're at with ENSO. Right now we're about a minus 1.25, and so we're getting into that moderate to borderline strong MEI criteria for La Niñas, which is kind of helping us, you know, get a good idea for what to anticipate coming up. I mean, I definitely think we're dealing with a La Niña winter here, Chip.
Okay, Michael. Yeah. We've always talked about the transition from neutral to La Nina or neutral to El Nino. Is that transition period over or is it still happening?
For the most part, I would say it's nearing its end. I mean, we're starting to see the sea surface temperatures really respond. There's a lot of really cold water in the subsurface there at the equator that's starting to make its way to the surface. And we're starting to see the effects of that in the weather patterns and coming up. So I think we're pretty much just pretty much in a good old fashioned La Nina here.
Okay. So what's the influence of that on our weather today at you know, in this period?
Okay. Yeah, that's a great question. So I think that as we continue to progress, we're going to start to see some of this significant warmth start to give way and decay a little bit to some cooler risks here, especially across the southern and eastern U.S. But what it's going to mean for a lot of us in the central U.S. and the primary corn and soybean belts is continued above average temperatures for the foreseeable future, especially for the central and western plains and Midwest there. In terms of precipitation, what it may continue to hint at is a little bit of an active northern plains and an active eastern belt where we've gotten pretty wet here recently. We've got another system coming in this weekend. And I've seen some folks talking about walking their fields. It's getting really wet out here in the eastern corn belt. So I could see that continuing, but there being a little bit of a void in between where it's drier in the central plains.
Okay. And then a La Nina winter here in the States sounds ominous to me.
You know, traditionally, Chip, the La Nina winters traditionally look like a much colder central and northern plains, you know, Midwest, basically the entire growing region traditionally looks like a much colder setup. Your most recent memory, you're talking about 2020, 2010, 2008, 2007. Those are some recent solid La Nina years. That, you know, would give you an idea of maybe what to expect. But traditionally, those are pretty cold. And in terms of precipitation for those winters, traditionally, they're a little bit on the wetter side, especially in the eastern corn belt and again in the western plains, but they're dry in the deep south.
Okay. All right. Kirk Hens. Thank you, Michael. Kirk.
You're welcome.
What does it mean for... the current weather patterns in Brazil, South America?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a great question. And also what's significant is the fact that this is a second year La Nina. So that really helps us pick out different years that may have similarities. And number one, a similar year has to be last year. And we all know the problems, especially that happened to Brazil, not really necessarily right now, but as we went deeper into the season, as we went into the new year, it just got drier, it got warmer. We're on pace with something similar, maybe not exactly as last year, but given the fact that it's a La Nina, you have to think that there is a drier risk, especially for the major central Brazilian croplands. Like Michael said, other years like 2011, 2010, 2005, those are some other 1998, recent years that are very close to that. But it is definitely, you think La Nina, you think drier risks, especially for Brazil. And keep an eye out for Argentina. 2017-18 was very dry for Argentina. It was a La Nina as well. I don't foresee a season that is without problems.
Okay. I like how you said that, Kirk. I do not see a season that is not without problems. Is that a double or a triple negative to get us to?
You know, it's at least two, Chip. It's at least two.
To get us.
That's
to get
one
us
way
to
put it, man.
That's exactly right. Great. The expectations, and I want to talk corn coming out of Brazil here for a moment. I mean, the expectations are that we're not going to have back-to-back bummer crops out of Brazil. And the real risk down there is that is the Safrinha corn crop. It's supposed to be like 70% of what they'll produce in a year. But it comes during it grain fills during their traditional dry time, and this last year the La Nina made the dry period even drier, right, Kirk?
No question about it, and that is the very same concern I have for this coming season. And we can't forget that dryness that set up into the grain field period of that Safrinha crop happened back at this time last year. We were drier, the models were too wet, they were too cool, it ended up, you know, warmer, and every week we kind of had this story where we just weren't getting sufficient rains, and you tack on, you know, weeks to months of that. And then you have an issue where you get into that important grain fill period and there isn't sufficient soil moisture. That's La Nina. That's the current La Nina that we're in. And I have the same concerns for not just soybeans, like we've been mentioning, but that second crop, the Safrinha corn crop as well.
Holy smokes. It's going to be another interesting winter and into early spring. Michael, I know that you are always looking for the latest, greatest indicators out there. What are you discovering in the weather outlook right now?
Yeah. The big thing, Chip, is we really like 2008 and the evolution of 2008 and both how that it lines up with tropical forcing and with our current La Nina progression. It's very close to 2008. What I like about it is how the pattern transitions in November to where I still think we're warm in the main growing regions of the U.S., but I think that winter can start very quickly this year, mid to late November, and be full force through December. A much colder and probably more wintrier, if that's a word,
December, it is now.
It is now. That's right. Yeah. But I would say just more winter weather, excuse me, and more cold quicker this year. And I like the 08 year for that and how it progressed. The big thing I want to keep an eye on here is the sea surface temperature pattern, the way that the sea surface temperatures are currently laid out in the Pacific Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean. You've got years like 2008 and 2010, and even a little bit of 2013. Those are all very cold winters. They really, really are, especially for the central U.S. So my attention to is I think it can be a pretty cold winter, in especially the growing regions, the soybean and corn belts here in the U.S. So.
All right. We've only got about a minute left, and I want to does the same go for Europe on that? I'm thinking about fuel consumption, energy demand.
Yeah, that's a great question. Kirk, what are you guys finding this morning on that?
Yeah, the same years that we're using for the U.S. we can translate into European. There are colder risks in Europe than are what currently modeled. Essentially, that's me saying, yes, I think there is colder risks in Europe, especially further to the west, and I do think it will continue to impact the gas market. Okay. and just the shortages. It's a concern.
All right. You guys are absolutely the best. You're so generous with your time on Monday. And really generous to come on and have the conversation with us today. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Chip. I appreciate you having us.
All right. That is Michael Clark and Kirk Hintz from BAMWX.com. There was big news announced this morning. Bushel has acquired GrainBridge. We'll talk about that next.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free Resource Stewardship Planning Guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Davis, are you proud of me?
I'm so proud of you, buddy. I'm not why.
I didn't even mention Polar Vortex once in that conversation.
I know, and it's such a cool term, too. Polar Vortex. Good work. Good restraint there.
Thank you. Yeah. but the La Nina winters, they bring with them a set of challenges that I think we all
for. And as we all know, La Nina is, of course, Spanish for the Nina. So we'll be sure to watch out for that.
Yes, we absolutely have to. Thank you for that, Davis. Appreciate it.
All right.
We've got some big news to talk about. Jake Jornstad, the co-founder of Bushel, joins us right now. Jake, it's good to have you back on AgriTalk. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
You are doing great. You announced this morning the acquisition of GrainBridge, which was a joint venture platform between ADM and Cargill. Tell us about it.
Yeah, appreciate it. So we got this acquisition done this morning. Just to be super clear, we acquired GrainBridge. They did not acquire us. I think it was confusing for some folks to think about. GrainBridge started as a joint venture in 2018-19 with Cargill and ADM. Their goal is to help farmers do better grain marketing. And so much of their goals and strategies were aligned to Bushel. We're helping the grain companies and their farmers do business together in a new way. And I think in the long term, if you think about how to bring the industry together, it doesn't make sense to continually have more and more platforms that do some of the same things. And so us coming together on this, in my opinion, simplifies the choices and hopefully makes life better for both the farmer and the commercial operators.
Because that data's got to work together at some point, doesn't it?
That's our goal. We call it the digital infrastructure that agriculture needs right now. We're focused on the grain supply chain. We need to connect facilities, farmers, and the downstream together, or there's no chance of us kind of evolving into this next level.
All right. So what does this mean for the existing Bushel users?
Yeah. So, well, first off, one of the biggest pieces that we're excited about is both Cargill, who had committed earlier this year, and now ADM are moving on to the Bushel platform. So if you're a Bushel user through one of your local co-ops, grain facilities you work with already, you'll also be able to get those tools sometime next year from both ADM and Cargill. And so it'll be, we're calling it the gold standard. This is how you should expect to do business with your facilities. It should be a great experience and it should be easy to do that. We've got a strong team coming in from GrainBridge, 15 people that are data scientists and engineers who are going to accelerate both the work we're doing on the Bushel platform as well as actually accelerating our roadmap for farm logs and how you as a farm user, farm management tool can do better from a grain marketing perspective and how that information can flow automatically. So that's the kind of up next.
Okay. What about for GrainBridge users? Much of a disruption here?
Initially, no. There's a lot of ADM users on GrainBridge right now, and they might be a little bit worried, but for the moment, nothing will change there. But over the course of the next 12 months or less, you'll see a transition happen where you'll get a new tool from the ADM folks, and it'll be on the Bushel platform, and we'll make it a kind of a smooth transition, and hopefully it'll be easy to make.
Okay, very good. So, Jake, your industry, the data management, where is your industry at in the development cycle?
You know, I think we're in the early majority still. So that first part of the second part of the phase where you've got, companies who are very sort of conservative but willing to take some bets, where they're starting to move into these tools, right? I think the industry still has a long ways to go around adopting. And our opinion is it's not the farmer that has the adoption issue. It's the rest of the supply chain that's behind. And so we're just getting to the early majority where you're seeing your typical company actually make a bet on these tools, because there's enough proof in the pudding that it's worth it, that it pays off, the ROI is there, and the gains are measurable. So I think we're getting somewhere, and it's exciting.
Okay, what does a data scientist do?
Yeah, it's a great question. Let me give you an example. One of the hardest things for a facility to figure out in harvest is what weeks do they need to staff up for deliveries? Because typically you're not going to staff as much around all year round as you are in those really sort of peak times in harvest. A data scientist can help, at least at Bushel, can help us help our customer predict within, for example, a 90% accuracy 2 to 3 months away, what week of the month in harvest will be the busiest and which week to staff up for. So imagine missing that by a week or two. You're staffing for, you know, weeks that you don't need to be staffed. And so that's an example of an outcome here. We can predict that ahead of time and give you a better sense of where to put your resources.
They're chasing efficiency is what they do.
You have to. We got to keep leveling up the supply chain. Physically, I think we do a nice job, right? The U.S., our physical infrastructure is incredible. Trains and plane, you know, the ability to move stuff down the river and the exporting capacity of the highways. But digitally, there's a lot of room to grow here.
Oh, man. It talk to a producer out there that's sitting in a combine right now listening to this that is thinking to themselves, my God, how am I ever going to keep up?
Well, first off, I hope their harvest is going well. It's a little rough in northern North Dakota where my family's from. First off, you probably, your local co-op or your facility you're delivering to has a Bushel app potentially. And so go check it out. And when you're having guys run into town and make those deliveries, it should show up right in the app. So no longer running around chasing paper scale tickets for starters.
Yeah.
And you'll know where you're at on any contracts. And hopefully that's the same experience from one to the next, because our goal is to have everybody using this tool across the grain industry. So it's a standard interface from a farmer perspective. It's easy to use. It's a no-brainer in terms of value to the farmer. It's free. It's free to the farmer. So hopefully it makes their harvest a little easier to keep track of.
That's so cool, Jake. So cool. And congratulations to you and to Bushel, which just acquired GrainBridge from ADM and Cargill. Good stuff, man. Thank you for making time, Jake.
Hey, thanks for making time for us, guys. Let's keep going, and good luck in harvest, everyone.
All right, good stuff. Hey, thank you for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. We're only two and a half minutes right now away from USDA's report, and Davis and I will have the details of the crop production supply and demand report. And tomorrow morning, we've got the Farmer Forum, and we're going to be talking more on the energy markets with Jordan Fife from BioUrja right here on AgriTalk.